Young Turks, guess what kind of show we have ahead for you guys? A giant one, of course. All right, a little bit later in the program, we're gonna have fun because today in the news, we've got a lot of serious stories, but some lighter ones too. So the two stories that I love the most, I gotta be honest, I'm gonna call it like it is Melania does it again. She swatted Trump one more time. We got more video, the sequel, SWAT the sequel. All right, secondly, the story you cannot miss in the second hour, in the whole show, is who are people marrying nowadays? Now, I'm a Libby Lib, but I saw that story and I was like, no, they are not marrying that, okay? So, save it for the second hour of the Young Turks. Well, that's what's happening, okay? Anna Kasparian is gonna join us and tell us that story. And then one more fun thing before we get started with tragic news, unfortunately, that is what is in the news today. James Cromwell, star of a thousand different movies, Jurassic World, Babe, the list will go on and on. We'll be here at 9:15 Eastern. If you're a member, you can watch it live. Members watch the interviews live. And he wants to come on. He's a super lib. He wants to talk about fracking, Cuomo, corruption. All right, super lib James Cromwell on the Young Turks tonight at 6:15 Pacific, 9:15 Eastern. That's for live for the members. If you're, you can become a member at tytnetwork.com/join, and then watch it. I think tytnetwork.com/members live. Okay. Anyways, having said all that, you know what I like about the James Cromwell interview, other than the fact that he's a badass lib, is that he called us. He's like, "Hey, you guys mind if I come on and talk about this stuff?" I was like, "No, I don't mind. Come on down, Jamie, you crazy dog." I don't think it goes by Jamie. I'll also be interviewing Bernie Sanders' brother in the UK on Friday. Lots of interesting stuff going on. Okay. Let's go forward now on to tragic news, unfortunately. So you've all heard by now that obviously there was a giant bombing in Manchester at an Ariana Grande concert. I want to tell you some of the details here. Obviously, every part of this is tragic. Huffington Post explains at least 22 people were killed, including children, and 59 were injured in the late night explosion. Police said 12 children under the age of 16 were among the wounded. Two of the victims have been identified as 18-year-old Georgina Callender and 8-year-old Safi Rose Russos. Every part of this story is heartbreaking. Okay, let's go to try to find out who did it. We at least know the main assailant who died in this attack. First of all, the Islamic State militant group, that's ISIS, claimed responsibility in a statement released on Tuesday for the attack via one of its official media channels. It is unclear, however, whether ISIS had any direct role in planning the Manchester bombing or if the attacker was in communication with the group. The US has not verified that ISIS was behind the attack, Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats said Tuesday morning. We do know who did it. According to British authorities, it is 23-year-old Salman Abedi. Salman Abedi. So he apparently blew himself up, an IED, we believe, that killed so many people. And did he target this Ariana Grande concert because there'd be more kids around? Unclear. Obviously, looking for a mass of people. That is why they do it on planes and then trains, and they've done it on these terrorist attacks and sporting events and now concerts. And it's tragic. And you know, if you, this is a Telegraph video that we're showing you now. And people, you know, it happened outside, and people just don't know what's going on, and some of them are kidding around, and then they realize, oh my God, and they start to see people with limbs that have been blown off and blood everywhere. And at one point, the crowd is told to calmly exit the building, everything's fine and safe. That's not true, as it turns. Look, it's much, much better to exit safely, because then that'll lead to more deaths if you don't. But it turned out that things were not safe. But at that point, the explosion had already happened. Now, more from Huffington Post on details. Manchester Chief Constable Ian Hopkins said early Tuesday the attack was conducted by one man who died at the scene. That's the guy we just told you about, Abedi. And initial reports said he carried an improvised explosive device near the arena and detonated. Ian Hopkins, that's the same Chief Constable for Manchester, says, "We've been treating this as a terrorist incident, and we believe that while the attack last night was conducted by one man, the priority is to establish whether he was acting alone or as part of a network. Now, I have read that another person was arrested as well. Now, in the first 24 hours, there's always confusing details, some of which turn out to be wrong later. So we don't know whether that guy was connected to the attack or not. Obviously, they're questioning him for a reason. They're investigating it as a terrorist attack. What else would you call this? It is almost certainly terrorism. ISIS takes credit for it, and they took credit for it fairly quickly. Sometimes when it's not related to them, they take a little longer. They're kind of confused, and they're like, "Yeah, I guess we want credit for that." This one they took credit very quickly on. That doesn't prove that it was coordinated with ISIS, and oftentimes ISIS will take credit afterwards. But that's what they're investigating, and we'll find out. We don't have good word on that yet. Now, I can give you the fatalities, and I just did, right? But sometimes there are portions of the story that, when I read it, really hit home. And obviously, when you see the pictures as we're showing you here, and if you're uncomfortable, that obviously I get it. If you want to turn away from it, but we do have to see the results of what happened here. And Andy Holly was waiting outside for the kids. He got hit by the explosion. He was okay, and then he explained, I looked through some of the bodies to try and find my wife and daughter. And in that moment, when I read that and I thought about being in his place for a second and trying to find your wife and daughter in the carnage of all those bodies lying around, it's if you're anywhere near human, that'll turn your stomach real quick. Now, as it turned out, super lucky, his wife and daughter were okay, and even though he got hit a little bit by the explosion, he's okay. Some talked about being thrown 30 feet by the explosion, somehow miraculously okay though. And then here's one more from the story. The 23-year-old Ariana Grande, of course, is a 4-time Kids' Choice Award winner. And because of her roots on Nickelodeon, her fan base tends to skew on the younger side. And it just, that also sent a chill down my spine because they might have been targeting the kids there. And look, what do we have? We've got an eye for an eye throughout the whole world, and we're all almost nearly blind now. And one of the things I think of in these situations is Brave New Films did this amazing story where they found some of the victims of our bombings in different places throughout the world. And if you're not aware, the US has killed civilians in Pakistan, Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, of course, all of those. Now, in the context of this, the rest of the press, I'm sure, certainly the right wing, will yell at us and say, how dare you? You should only talk about this, and you should never mention any context at all. But in order to stop the terrorists, we have to figure out why they're doing it. And there are some simpletons out there who think, oh no, you just call it a magical name and then it'll go away. Well, you guys got your president and he called it the magical name. It still hasn't gone away. He said he would solve all this in 30 days. We're now 4 months in, he still hasn't solved it. So what happened to your magic? Turns out that's a really, really dumb strategy. He said we'd bomb them and we'd kill their family members. Actually, we did. We've killed a lot more civilians under Trump in our bombings in Syria. Has that solved it? That hasn't solved it either. So it turns out you were wrong, just more carnage doesn't exactly solve it. One of the reasons that they do it, I think the main reason why any of the mass shooters or terrorists do it, is they're looking for glory. And they're looking for glory in all the wrong places, and so they want to be famous. So, you know, here we'll say the name, and I try really hard not to say the names going forward, whether they're mass shooters or terrorists. We don't always succeed on that, honestly, but we're trying our best. And so I don't want to feed into that, and I don't want to have these guys become martyrs and to their fan base, however perverted and sick that fan base might be, some sort of heroes. But second part of it is, they think in the case of the Muslim fundamentalists who do it, well, you know, we want you to feel what we feel. So when our kids are killed, you guys don't seem to care. That's why I mentioned the Brave New Films piece, because not only did they do a story about it, they brought this kid in who had lost family members. They had him testify before Congress, which is powerful. And he the parents explained that whenever anything flies overhead now, the kid goes and hides in a tree because he's worried that the houses are going to get bombed by the US like we've done in the past, and that his family members and he himself are going to die. So we've traumatized those folks to no end. And so part of this is they want to traumatize us back. It doesn't make either one of those things right, and it doesn't equate them. Just because you mention context doesn't mean that all those things are equal. Yes, there are some bad guys that we go after. Yes, we make mistakes. Yes, we most of the time try not to target civilians, although some of the times we do. And so when this happens, we have got to be smart about figuring out how to end it. And just saying more bombings or just targeting one religion, it's so simple and it makes you feel good. It's faux intellectualism, like oh yeah, I figured out. I'm so brave, I'm so strong. I was brave enough to say it's Islam. Wow, in the West saying it's Islam, so brave. Not remotely brave and not remotely smart. Now in this case, it appears to be a Muslim kid who did it, and certainly fundamentalist, certainly a terrorist. But what we're trying to do is prevent further ones. So yes, you need police work for that. And sometimes I remember when they criticized Bill Clinton all the way back in the day, the Bush administration had said, no, no, we can't treat these people like criminals, we have to treat it like a war. Okay, but oftentimes they come from our own countries, whether it's here in the US or in the UK, I don't know where this guy came from. But if he's inside your own country, what are you gonna do, bomb yourself? Bomb Manchester? Well, that's what he did. I mean, that's painfully stupid. You're gonna randomly bomb the country that is what his parents or grandparents are from? And what does that accomplish? One of the things it accomplishes is more civilian deaths, more eyes gouged out, then more people looking to gouge out our eyes. It doesn't mean that you appease them. Hell no, right? It doesn't mean you negotiate with them. For Christ's sake, though, for everybody's sake, let's find a smart strategy and not just go with easy answers like, bomb them, see what happens. We've been bombing them for decades on top of decades. Is it working? Can we, at a bare minimum, all reasonable human beings acknowledge that whatever we've been doing, and certainly bombing and war has been a giant part of our strategy, it isn't working. They continue to bomb us, maybe not despite the fact that we bombed them, but because of the fact that we bombed them. So if you think that is an outrageous thing to say and you want to close your eyes and close your mind and just yell out things like Islam, radical Islamic extremists, bomb, war, okay, you can choose to be stupid, I can't help you on that. And if you think that that's an intellectual argument, oh, I feel even more sorry for you. But I hope that the rest of us can figure out a better way to address this, because what we're doing now isn't working. And every time I see one of these stories, if you're a decent human being, you think you feel terrible for those people. And the parents who lost the 8-year-old, the 16-year-olds, and their friends and their family and all the people who were there who will be traumatized forever. And of course, partly you think what it could have been us there, but for the grace of God, go I. So for everybody's sake, let's figure out a way to solve this and not do it in a way that is simpleton, that is counterproductive. And yes, part of that is great police investigations to root it out, hopefully before it happens, and certainly afterwards to catch the people who did this and put a short term end to it while we look for a long term solution that can actually work. One last thing, guys. I know it seems impossible because we just have these attacks over and over and over again, right? But remember, there was a lot of terrorism, and a lot of people don't remember. This is why I give you the context. There was more terrorism in the 1970s in Europe than there is today. You know, if you watch the news, you go, no way, the terrorism is way bigger today. It's not. It was much larger in the 1970s. So now a lot of that has declined. And how did it decline? Well, look, one example, for example, is the situation in Northern Ireland, where we had bombing after bombing, death after death, civilians killed, maimed, limbs blown off, all the same things. And you know what worked in that case to lower the violence dramatically? Peace. I know that they keep telling you the answer is war, but it is counterfactual. The reality is, For example, I'll give you another example, Israel versus Egypt. Egypt was Israel's largest enemy, the one that they feared the most, the one that did the most amount of damage. Jimmy Carter did a peace deal. Nobody's been killed between those two countries since. Other countries around Israel that didn't do a peace deal, they're still at war with, still have great hostilities, conflicts that flare up over and over again. But what worked? A peace deal worked. So when you see on television people trying to rile you up with your anger, it's easy. I get angry too. We're all humans. Of course we get angry at this, right? But remember that sometimes they have a point. Their point is to drive towards more war, and that has not stop the terrorism, that has not made it better. There is one thing that historically has worked, and I know that they'll say, oh yeah, you're weak, haha. Well, okay, then you're stupid, because facts show you that when we do peace deals, shockingly enough, a lot of the time, we get peace. If you're as tired of these bombings and acts of terrorism as I am, for God's sake, let's head in a different direction. All right, now that's me being frustrated. I'm going to be angry at the next part of the story. Okay. James Woolsey is a former CIA director and a neocon. He's one of the neoconservatives who thought going to Iraq was a brilliant idea. Hey, James, how'd that work out? You still defending that monstrosity, one of the biggest errors in American history? Where we went and lost over 5,000 of our own, over 50,000 injured, hundreds of thousands of civilians killed in Iraq. And now it's largely run by a Shia government that is at war with its own population who are Sunni. And those Sunnis became so angry that part of them became ISIS. How's all of that working out, James? Well, this man has the temerity to go on TV and to tell us that the bombing that happened in Manchester is Obama's fault. Watch.
The radical Islamists, and I would call them that, have decided to pick up the pace with the terrorist attacks, and I think we'll probably see some more. And we now have a president who is pretty straightforward that he is at war with them. He's not going to soft pedal that. He calls them evil. And we haven't had a situation like that. We did not have in the 8 years of the Obama administration a president who wanted to fight and win a war.
Wait. Obama's not president anymore. And it's not Trump's first day. We're past 100 days. We're 4 months in. And he had time to prepare beforehand. You're still blaming Obama? Now, Shep Smith, to his credit on Fox News there, said it's awfully early to politicize this, and you can't say that President Obama wasn't involved in wars, because he was. You can't say he didn't want to win them, because he never said that. And Woolsey said, well, yeah, he didn't say it, but that's what he believed. Oh, okay, so mind reader James Woolsey. So let's review. You start the disastrous war in Iraq, you and your neocon idiot buddies. That turns into an epic historic disaster creates a group called ISIS that's so much worse than Al-Qaeda, we've almost forgotten Al-Qaeda, let alone the fact that Al-Qaeda was never in Iraq in the first place. How many times have you apologized for that, James Woolsey? How many times have you realized the error of your ways that caused some of these monsters in the first place? My guess is never, right? Then Obama comes in, and I think he did way too many drone bombings, and you know, he escalated in Afghanistan and it was useless. But Woolsey says, no, he didn't do enough war. I wanted more blood. I know, because you're a maniac and you think that blood gives you the answers. Did we get an answer out of Iraq, James? Did we? Did we end terrorism after your stupid invasion of Iraq? Did we? No, we didn't. Terrorism got worse, it didn't get better. But you never learn your lessons. And then you told us Donald Trump was gonna solve it. He was gonna solve it right away. Here, I'll show you a clip from Donald Trump where he's gonna tell you 30 days. Now we're way past 30 days. Go ahead, Donald, tell us your bullshit about how you were gonna solve terrorism when you're president. Go ahead.
I will ask my generals to present to me a plan within 30 days to defeat and destroy ISIS. This will require military warfare, but also cyber warfare, financial warfare, and ideological warfare.
I said, I have a great plan, it's gonna be great. Well, what is it? I'd rather not say I wanna be unpredictable.
Okay, mission accomplished, you're unpredictable. Where the hell's your plan? You said you'd have it ready in 30 days. Where is it? Are you never going to announce it? Are you going to get impeached before you ever announce it? Are you going to resign before you ever announce it? Are you going to finish your term before you ever announce it? You don't have a plan. You've never had a plan. You're an orange buffoon. And guys like James Woolsey worked on his transition team. Oh yeah, this will solve it. We'll get this another moron, like we had George W. Bush, who is a total moron. We'll get one even dumber than him, Donald Trump, and he'll go, oh yeah, I got a secret plan. Oh, I'll solve it. Oh, we're gonna bomb him, and I'm gonna get my generals together. Oh yeah, I'm gonna solve it in 30 days. Hey, we're 4 months in, Donald. You still haven't solved it. There's still bombings all over. There's still terrorism everywhere. What happened? It turns out you're a fool and a goddamn liar. Now Woolsey has the temerity to come on TV and tell us it's Obama's fault. When are you guys ever going to take personal responsibility? Conservatives always talk about personal responsibility, but they never ever take it. James Woolsey, you should have used that opportunity to go on Fox News and apologize to the American people. Say, hey, I was one of the neocons who pushed for the Iraq war, and look at the beasts and monsters that has unleashed. I am so sorry because I have blood on my hands. That would have been the correct way to go. Don't ever, ever blame anyone else if you're a neoconservative. If anyone is at fault, it's you fools who's unleashed ISIS in the first place. So if you're not gonna admit to it and apologize, go ahead and do the rest of us a favor already and shut the fuck up. I hope that was clear enough. Woolsey once thought that he was gonna come on this program. I don't believe he's going to come on anymore. Okay. God damn these monsters. Okay, anyway, let's go to the next story. So Donald Trump in even bigger trouble, another Washington Post story about more obstruction of justice. As you see this story and I read you some of the details of it, just think about what if this were Obama? What would the Republicans do? How quickly would they start impeachment proceedings? How many investigations would already be not only underway but nearly concluded? And then go one step further and think, what if Hillary had won? And Hillary Clinton asked people to obstruct an investigation into her corruption. What do you think the Republicans would have done? Let alone the media, let alone everyone else. So now with that context, let me tell you what's happening. Washington Post reports that President Trump asked two of the nation's top intelligence officials in March to help him push back against an FBI investigation into possible coordination between his campaign and the Russian government, according to current and former officials. Now, if that's true, it's the textbook definition of obstruction of justice. There's an investigation into you and your campaign on whether you colluded with the Russians, and you ask two intelligence heads to stop the investigation. Lock him up. Okay, more details. Trump made separate appeals to the director of the National Intelligence, Daniel Coats, and to Admiral Michael S. Rogers, the director of National Security Agency, urging them to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion during the 2016 election. Now, both of those are deeply conservative right-wingers, and to my surprise, they said no. So credit where credit is due to them. Coats and Rogers refused to comply with the requests, which they both deemed to be inappropriate, according to two current and two former officials. So that's four different sources confirm this happened. You'll see Coates, his own quote in a second, which goes a long way towards confirming this story. But let me continue with more details. Trump's conversations with Rogers was documented contemporaneously in an internal memo written by a senior NSA official, according to the officials. Okay, so two things. Rogers, the Obama administration warned against him. He's that right wing, and they warned, the other guy they warned against was Michael Flynn. But even Rogers says, no, I'm not gonna stop an ongoing FBI investigation for you. Of course not, that would be wildly illegal. And he, just like James Comey, goes, we have to take an internal memo on this, because I don't wanna get caught with my hand in the cookie jar and people think that I helped to collude to stop investigations. Write a memo saying the moron president asked me to do obstruction of justice. Now, We'll see what the memo says. That is obviously my interpretation based on the things that I am reading you. You could watch, and we'll have a link to the Washington Post article. Please read it for yourself. Read any other material you have on it. We want you to do your own research, come to your own conclusions. And most importantly, let's get all those memos. Let's get the Comey memo. Let's get the Rogers memo and find out what the president actually said. And if Trump was stupid enough to record all this, great, let's get the tapes. Now, meanwhile, of course, the Republicans are now backpedaling. Jason Chaffetz, who originally said, "Get me my subpoena pen," because he's going to subpoena the James Comey memo, now going around saying, "No, no, no, we should go the opposite direction and we should put the leakers in jail. Cover up, cover up, cover up, cover up." It's not going to work. And then everyone who helped him cover up is going to be in a world of trouble. All right, let's keep going. Rogers was taken aback, but tried to respectfully explain to the moron, no, I mean explain, why he could not do so, the official said. For one thing, he could not comment on an ongoing investigation. Rogers added he would not talk about classified matters in public. Okay, so even these deep right wingers, the moron in chief comes up and goes, okay, can you block that investigation? They're like, no, no, Mr. President, I can't block that investigation, and I can't believe you just asked me to, right? So look, I don't know if he's just stupid or corrupt or both. I largely know both. It's obvious that he's desperate to stop the investigation. Gee, I wonder why you're desperate to stop an investigation. If you're investigating something I didn't do, have at it, Hoss, right? You're not gonna find anything unless you make it up, right? So in his case, he knows they're gonna find something. He's like, Comey, stop it, stop it. Oh, damn it, Comey won't stop it. Okay, Coates, Rogers, guys, you make him stop it. Oh, you guys won't do it either. Fine, you're fired, Comey. Oh, it's because of Hillary Clinton. Oh, I'm on TV. No, it was because it was the Russian investigation. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Look, this guy worked dozens of articles about this. We covered it during the campaign. He worked with mafia figures on a lot of his construction. Again, imagine if it were Obama. And Obama, in his career before running for president, had worked with the Bloods and the Crips on some business projects. Do you think he would have been elected? Let alone, you know, all the other things that they did to him? Okay, they investigated him on nothing anyway, right? This guy, what's he doing? He's doing what he learned from the old days. You got a construction job, you go to Tony, you got a thong, you know what I'm saying? And then you told Tony, cut it out. Now he's president. Doesn't realize there's a thing called rule of law and he has to actually abide by it. So he's like, hey, Rogers, Coates, why don't you do what I tell you to do? Right? And what do we have? Oh, people have kind of gotten used to it. Like, oh yeah, well, of course, yeah, that's fine. Deeply, deeply, deeply corrupt. He's always been corrupt. From those construction projects to the undocumented immigrants he hired over and over again, and then he fired when he got caught, to Trump University, to every scam he's ever run, let alone all the money he borrowed from the Russians. You think we can't track the money, you schmuck? I can't wait for you to be let out in handcuffs. Okay, former senior intelligence official says, the problem wasn't so much asking them to issue statements, it was asking them to issue false statements about an ongoing investigation. He is in a world of trouble. Anyone who doesn't realize it, and I'm telling you, now I see Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush come out. What did I tell you? The guys that he wronged on the Republican side, when they smell blood in the water, they're gonna come out and start shivving him. Rubio's like, he doesn't know what he's talking about with Israel. He's never gonna get a peace deal. Jeb Bush comes out and says, I told you, it's the chaos president. I warned you, right? Because they know, they got a sense, this guy's going down. Senior White House official says, they were wondering. They asked these guys, Coates and Rogers, can we ask him to shut down the investigation? Are you able to assist in this matter? Look, even if you were a sophisticated corrupt individual, you wouldn't just flat out ask them. You would imply things. You would ask them to read between the lines. You wouldn't come out like a schmuck and just do flat out obstruction of justice in front of everybody. Which is a way they can write a memo about it and tell you no. God, they're so dumb. These guys cannot do a cover up. They don't have the intellectual capacity to do a correct cover up. He's going down. Lock him up, lock him up. Current and former officials said that Trump either lacks an understanding of the FBI's role as an independent law enforcement agency or does not care about maintaining such boundaries. As we just talked about, the answer is both. He never cared about boundaries. He never followed the law in the first place. All the undocumented immigrants, all the mafia guys, he never got caught. What would he do? When he bragged about it during the primaries. He said, I just pay off the politicians. He said, I've been doing this game all along. They're all corrupt. They all take my payments. You know what that's called? That's called bribes. That's also wrong. Okay. Finally, you go to Dan Coats. He's testifying today in front of the Senate, partly about the bombing in the UK and partly about this and other intelligence matters. He's the director of national intelligence. And when they asked him, hey, so did this conversation happen? He said, I do believe that information and discussions I've had with the president are something that should not be disclosed. On the other hand, if I'm called before an investigative committee, I will certainly provide them with what I know and what I don't know. Cue it up, man. Lock him up. Lock him up. Somebody get me handcuffs. If the director of national intelligence that Trump himself picked, who is a massive right winger, did not have that conversation with Trump, you know what his answer would be? No, of course not. That's ridiculous. No, I mean, the president and I did not have that conversation. He wouldn't say, I can't disclose whether I did or did not have that conversation. But if you bring me in front of the right committee and you force me to answer, oh, I'll tell you. Somebody get me handcuffs. Pence is warming up in the bullpen. Okay. Now, one more on this issue, similar issue. Okay. John Brennan is the former CIA director. And in the past, Trump has implied that no, Brennan says there's nothing to investigate here, that when he was the CIA director, there was no connections between Trump and Russia that could be proven. See, Brennan's on my side, is he? Let's find out. Now, first, before we get to the heart of the Russian investigation, I'm going to show you a video about, hey, when Trump met with the Russians in the Oval Office and let it slip out, if that's in fact what he did, that, oh yeah, here's our information and intelligence we have in Syria. Now, we later found out that that was deeply classified information that the Israelis had given us and that they were livid over it. But he just blurted it out when the Russians were there. Now, was that the right way to do it? Even if you're the president, you can declassify matters. So is that still an acceptable procedure? Let's find out from Brent.
I shared classified information with the Russians while I was director of CIA. CIA, on a routine basis, shares classified information with Russians on terrorism matters. It doesn't mean that it becomes unclassified. It means that it retains the classification, but is releasable then to Russia or to other partners. But if the reports in the press are true that Mr. Trump decided to spontaneously share some intelligence with the Russians, I think he would have basically violated two protocols. And those two protocols are, one is that such intelligence, classified intelligence, is not shared with visiting foreign ministers or local ambassadors. It's shared through intelligence channels because it needs to be handled the right way, and it needs to make sure that it is not exposed. He didn't do that, if the press charges are accurate. Secondly, before sharing any classified intelligence with foreign partners, it needs to go back to the originating agency to make sure that the language in it is not, even just providing the substance, going to reveal sources and methods and compromise the future collection capability. So it appears as though, at least from the press reports, that neither did it go in the proper channels, nor did the originating agency have the opportunity to clear language for it. So that is a problem.
Let me decipher that for you guys. He's saying it's probably not illegal, and we've shared classified information with the Russians when we're working with them. And as the president, he can declassify it anyway, or he can keep it classified and share it with the Russians. But there is a proper way to do it. You go back to the originating agency, you make sure the language is right, we're not giving away our sources or our ally sources. In other words, the guy's a total schmuck. You don't go to the Russian foreign minister and ambassador and go, oh yeah, you want to know the intelligence we got about Syria and ISIS? I'll just tell you. That's what idiots do. So now to the heart of the matter on his collusion with Russia. Brennan said Russia brazenly interfered in the 2016 election process. Well, that seems fairly clear that that Trump is wrong when he quotes Brennan as being on his side, that there is no evidence to that. Let's let you actually listen to Brennan himself here.
Did evidence exist of collusion, coordination, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russian state actors at the time you learned of 2016 efforts?
I encountered and am aware of information and intelligence that revealed contacts and interactions between Russian officials and U.S. persons involved in the Trump campaign that I was concerned about because of known Russian efforts to suborn such individuals. And it raised questions in my mind, again, whether or not the Russians were able to gain the cooperation of those individuals. I don't know whether or not such collusion, that's your term, such collusion existed. I don't know. But I know that there was a sufficient basis of information and intelligence that required further investigation by the Bureau to determine whether or not U.S. persons were actively conspiring, colluding with Russian officials.
Yes, they were investigating it. Yes, there was evidence. No, by the time he left office, he had not reached a conclusion yet. But he believes that that conclusion might be out there. In fact, let me give you one last quote from the former CIA director. Frequently, individuals who go along the treasonous path do not even realize they're along that path until it gets to be a bit too late. So Trump and Gowdy, who thought he was going to prove Trump right there, his Republican protector, Gowdy, thought that they were going to get Brennan to admit that there was no evidence. Instead, he talked about a treasonous path. Anyone who thinks Trump is smart enough to cover all his tracks for all the deals he did with the Russians doesn't know a thing about Trump. One of the dumbest guys alive. Oh, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out. Oh, yeah, oh boy. And then when I do, I'm going to get tired of winning. You're going to get tired of something, but it ain't going to be winning. Somebody hand me handcuffs. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks. Guys, there's so many great tweets, but we got a ton of stories. Let me just read you a couple, that's all. RDGP says, again, Manchester reacted perfectly. Strength and love and common humanity, not murder, dehumanization. Solidarity rules. Bless your heart on that. Mandy says, my daughter is almost 8 and loves Ariana Grande. This is a concert I could have taken her to. I got cold sweats when I heard. And El Duende Chingon says, bombs will be repaid with bombs in an endless cycle of death. Maybe one day will be better. Okay, so now let me go on to a story that we broke and that I'm very proud of. So this is another Young Turks exclusive for you guys. Jonathan Larson, our managing editor at TYT Politics, is breaking this story. You could read it on medium.com/theyoungturks. I'm going to tell you all about it. It's about the medical devices tax and a company named Stryker that was complaining about it deeply and what they said and what the reality is. This is why I love journalism and research and finding out what their other statements in the public are, especially to their own investors. That's where we find out the truth. So Jonathan begins explaining by saying Stryker Corporation CEO Kevin Lobo has made multiple statements on national television about the negative impact that Obamacare's tax on medical equipment has had on his company and the industry. But those claims appear to be undercut not only by the company's SEC filings, but also by statements made to Wall Street analysts by Stryker's own executives, including Lobo himself. Now he mentioned their TV appearances. Let's go to Lobo on CNBC and have him talk about how outrageous the medical devices tax by Obamacare was.
Basically, the tax really is a job killer. It's an innovation killer.
Right, but what did Congress do?
Congress decided to suspend.
Did Obama sign it?
Yep, it had bipartisan support just for suspension for a two-year period. But what we look forward to with the new administration is actually a full repeal, which has been talked about.
So this was implemented in the beginning. Lobo said it was, quote, a job killer, so we're going to look into that first, and then an innovation killer, and we're going to look into that second, and we're going to show you the actual facts. Now, understand that Obama, before he left, did, as he explained there, suspend it. We shouldn't have suspended it, but he did, which led perfectly into Republican hands, because when Trump comes in, he is pushing for a full repeal, as Lobo explained. So let's now dive into the actual facts. Lobo's opposition to Obamacare, as Jonathan explains, centers on its medical device tax, which was added to subsidize the cost of expanding coverage and was projected to net $27 billion for that purpose. Medical device makers were singled out because they would benefit from expanded insurance coverage. So they were actually going to get a lot of that money back anyway. That was the whole point of the tax, is that let's be equitable here. We don't want you to just take the upside and then spread the downside to others. But anytime you have any downside for any industry, they will unleash their lobbyists. And of course, and they spend tremendous amount of money lobbying on this issue. And Lobo said, quote, the tax really is a job killer. It's an innovation killer. Congress decided to suspend it. It had bipartisan support just for suspension for a 2-year period. But we look forward to, with the new administration, a full repeal, as we showed you guys. Now, that was their claims in public. They say Stryker first publicly blamed the medical device tax for the imminent layoffs of 5% of its global workforce in a November 10th, 2011 press release, more than a year ahead of the tax. The layoff announcement became a national symbol of Obamacare's detrimental effect on jobs. However, in a filing submitted the same day to the SEC and subject to federal regulations regarding its veracity, Stryker offered an explanation more commonly cited for layoffs. The company wanted to eliminate redundancies created by recent acquisitions. So on the one hand, publicly they're saying, oh, it's Obamacare, it's gonna kill 5% of our workforce. And then when they have to actually say things that are provable in an SEC filing, they go, they don't mention Obamacare at all or the tax. They just go, well, we acquired a bunch of companies, so of course we laid people off. Yes, cost savings. And they brag about it. They say these actions, again, we explain here, these actions are being initiated to provide efficiencies. This is according to Stryker Corporation. Efficiencies and realign resources, another code word for firing people, following recent acquisitions to allow for continued investment in strategic areas in an ongoing challenging economic environment and market slowdown in elective procedures. So then it wasn't Obamacare. There's a market slowdown in elective procedures and you're doing realignment for your cost efficiencies, meaning you're firing people to save money, having nothing to do with the tax, but because of the mergers that you did and because the market is slowing down. Okay, now AdvaMed is an industry organization that lobbies together for all of these companies, including Stryker. And Lobo actually has contributed to AdvaMed, and AdvaMed has then contributed to trying to kill this tax. And he's also a part of that organization as well. So Jonathan Larson explains, AdvaMed has pointed to a study estimating that the medical device industry would lose 43 jobs once the tax was implemented. In August of 2012, however, PolitiFact reported that the study was funded by AdvaMed and that the research service Bloomberg government found this study not credible. So they do a study that they themselves commission and they go, tell us that we're gonna lose jobs. Oh, look at that, this study says we're gonna lose 43,000 jobs. PolitiFact, good journalism on their end, looks into it and goes, it's just not credible, it's not true. The study, the one that they commissioned, assumed, for instance, that the manufacturers would move 10% of their production overseas, even though the tax applied to imported devices as well. So you understand that? They say, oh, it's, well, we gotta move the jobs overseas because of this tax here in America. But the tax also applies to the devices that are imported in. It applies just the same. Total BS excuse, has nothing to do with the tax. Okay, Stryker has not said whether it will create any new jobs in the event of a full repeal. But wait a minute, I thought you told me this thing was a job killer, and then if you repeal it, then all of a sudden you're gonna have all these jobs. But when you actually have to do SEC filings and things that can be double checked, all of a sudden you're not promising any new jobs. So now we go back to Lobo on CNBC.
Save Medicare, Medicaid and Social Security without cuts. Have to do it. Get rid of the fraud, get rid of the waste and abuse.
Regardless of what happens with the new administration, we're not really expecting any major change. So really? Our volumes have been very consistent, very steady. Our organic growth, we've had 14 quarters in a row growing higher than 5%. And unlike pharmaceuticals, our medical device products have, prices have been declining every year since 2008. So our price decrease each year is about 1.5 to 2%.
Wait a minute, it sounded like you were bragging about how great your business is doing. I thought after all these years under this tax that you would have been crushed by now. You had to fire all these people. What happened? Turns out you're doing pretty well. I've got a lot more details on that. Kevin Lobo said, we're also continuing on our path toward driving greater cost efficiencies. Cost efficiencies means firing people. Okay, Stryker's filings and public statements also show little evidence that the tax has proved to be an innovation killer for the company. So we looked at jobs, now let's look at innovation, see how they're doing over there. After increasing spending on research, development, and engineering by just 2% in the year prior, Stryker increased R&D spending 13.8% in the first year of the tax. Wait a minute, I thought you were going to have to lower it. Instead, you dramatically increased innovation through your R&D budget. Then from $471 million to $536 million, R&D spending rose by an average annual rate of 10.1% during the 3 years in which the tax was applied. Lie number two, innovation is going to die. We can't do R&D anymore because of the tax. Let's increase it by 10%. And I'm glad they increased research and development. Just don't lie about it in public and pretend that that Obamacare was going to kill your research and development when it did the exact opposite. I'm not saying that Obamacare caused them to increase the spending on research and development, but it certainly didn't decrease it. That's just a fact. Okay. Kevin Loeb goes on to say, our ongoing investments in R&D as well as our targeted mergers and acquisitions positions us well to deliver innovation to our hospital customers. So apparently, Kevin Loeb on the one hand says, oh, they're innovation killer, I'm on TV, I hate Obamacare. And then turns around to his investors in the SEC, says, oh, we're doing great. We're doing even better in R&D, innovation's awesome. Which one is it, Kevin Loeb? Which one is it? Oh, if you pay a little bit more taxes, then you won't get as much compensation. Which, by the way, that didn't even turn out to be true, but the greed is endless. Gimme, 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 and I never want to give anything back. Okay, so besides increasing spending on executive pay, R&D, mergers and acquisitions, and dividend payouts, Stryker also upped the amount of money it used to repurchase its own stock. Stock buybacks during the tax's 3 year span totaled $1.17 billion. Oh, we don't have any money because of the tax that Obamacare put on us. We have so much cash, we don't know how to invest it, we don't know what to do with it. So let's just buy back more of our stock, which increases our stock price and increases executive compensation. Of course. After handing shareholders $324 million in dividends the year before the tax hit, in 2013, Stryker paid out $401 million in dividends. That increased to $462 million in 2014 and $521 million in 2015. What happened? I thought the tax was going to kill you guys and there was going to be no more jobs or innovation. Meanwhile, you're piling on the dividends that you're giving to shareholders, the buybacks for your program. And now let's go to compensation for folks like Kevin Loeb. Loeb's total compensation rose from $9.23 million in 2012 to $12.8 million in 2016. What happened, Kevin Loeb? I thought that this was going to be devastating for you guys. You know what the real answer is? He's thinking, man, if I didn't have a little extra tax, maybe instead of $12.6 million, I could have made $14 million. Okay, so let me go on TV and tell you a whole bunch of lies, which I will then say the exact opposite of when I have to actually tell the truth on SEC filings. Okay, Stryker's cash on hand ballooned as well during the period the tax was said to be killing jobs and innovation. Stryker's federal filings show its cash reserves swelled from $1.4 billion before the tax to $3.4 billion at the time that it was suspended. Look, there's a reason why I'm telling you this, guys. It's not just about Stryker. Now, this happens to be an easy case to point out. And if everybody cared to do investigative journalism, as we're trying to do here at Young Turks and TYT Politics, you could go to their SEC filings and tell and see what the reality of the matter is. But it is a bigger story than that. When they tell you, oh, I'm doing this for you, so it'll trickle down all over you guys. Or maybe it will, maybe it won't. Anyway, and I'm trying to protect your jobs. I just care about the middle class in America. No, they care about their own compensation. When they say they don't have any money because of the tax, it turns out they've got $2 billion more in cash, despite the tax. Not telling you the truth. And now, despite calling the tax a job killer, Loeb has grown Stryker's payroll from $22,010 in employees in 2012 to more than $33,000 today. So what happened? I thought it was a jobs killer. It wasn't. They were never telling the truth about it. The reality is the only reason they argue against those is so that those executives can make more money. All right, back on the Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. Let me read a couple of tweets for you guys, hashtag TYT Live. To communicate to us while the show is live, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Natalie Sterrett writes in, the tax was a brilliant way to expand coverage. Pharmaceutical and medical device companies make far more money than they will admit. That's why Jenna Larson did the very simple thing of going to check their SEC filings. They're not allowed to lie there, or they might get in some serious trouble if they do. So it's one thing to easily say it on CNBC. It's not like they're going to check you, right? But that's what our job here is. Gabby Morita says, I'm loving seeing the Young Turks break stories. Amazing return on investment for donating to the journals and fundraiser. Keep it up. Thank you, Gabby. We appreciate it. That's exactly what we're trying to do for you guys. Deliver on that promise. Willie Lempert and Carol Solistica are our members of the day. Thank you guys. And now you can support us through becoming a member, tytnetwork.com/join, support independent media. Now, let me go to Just Democrats, and then we'll end on a fun story as well. Okay, and the Justice League grows. So Just Democrats adding another candidate today, guys. But before I tell you about her, just a quick update on Paula Jean Swearengen. She is the candidate running as Joe Manchin in West Virginia. There will be a Democratic primary there. She's already got great momentum and already raised $67,000 with 3,468 donors. Those are all small donors. So you can find out how to donate to her through, first of all, PaulaJean2018.com/donate. Or if you go to JustDemocrats.com/donate, that actually has a way that you can equally donate to all the new candidates out there. And that leads me to tell you about the new one that we've got. In Texas's 14th district, Adrian Bell is going to be running. Oh, well, let's do a little bit of. All right, maybe we save it a little bit until we actually have a victory, which would be awesome. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Adrian. She was raised in South Park, that's a community near Dallas, Texas. Like all the Just Democratic candidates, real people looking for real change. And her mother was a maid. She saw that family struggle go down. She was the first in her family to graduate from college. And her top concern is education. And she wants all your kids to have the same opportunity and to be able to live the American dream. So she believes that a post-secondary education should be affordable without you being saddled with massive debt. Now, who's she running against? She's running against a guy named Randy Weber. Randy Weber is a Republican in that district and a fairly disastrous one. So who are Randy Weber's largest donors? Marathon, Exxon, Halliburton? Do I see a pattern here? So part of the reason why we're called the Justice Democrats is because they represent just us, not their donors. Now, a lot of times they take on corporate Democrats. In this case, they're going to take on a Republican. And if you thought the corporate Democrats were bad in taking corporate donations, wait till you get a load of the Republicans at the national level. And certainly that applies for Randy Weber. He's got a couple of different problems. First, obviously, he represents these giant companies and does their bidding for them. Secondly, he has voted in favor of repealing the Affordable Care Act and in favor of Trump Care, which will cut over $800 billion from Medicaid. And he has supported pretty much all of Trump's cabinet picks. And he, at a Washington Man of Prayer event in April, decried what he said liberals call an alternative lifestyle. He says it tramples on our holy institutions of holy matrimony. And he asked forgiveness for what Americans have done to the institution of marriage. So apparently, if you're a gay American, you shouldn't get the same rights. Everybody else should have equal rights, but gay Americans, because of Randy Weber's particular religious beliefs that he would like to impose on the rest of us, should not have the same rights to marry whoever they want. Randy Weber thinks, it says in the First Amendment that we should have a free exercise of religion. It says in the Constitution, we shall not establish a religion, but I'd like my religion to rule over all of you guys. Hey, Randy Weber, if you're not interested in gay marriage, then don't get gay married. But for the rest of us, we believe in the US Constitution, and we'd like to have a representative that represents us, all of us, and not just the people that are in your particular sect. And he also decried and apologized, apparently to the Lord, for the Bibles being taken out of schools and the Ten Commandments off of the walls. So you want Bibles taught in the schools? Well, then you're in favor of a theocracy, and you misunderstood the whole point of America. It doesn't matter how deeply religious you are. And by the way, one of the reasons our founding fathers didn't want to mix church and state is because not just because they wanted to protect the government from being ruled by one particular sect of Christianity or any other religion. It's also because they wanted to protect the church from the government intermingling and getting its hands on the church. But Randy Weber doesn't understand that because he's un-American. He would rather live in a theocracy than live in the secular republic that we have today. So I would urge you to show him the door. You can't really tell him how you feel because he's not doing town halls anymore. His position on the Affordable Care Act is so unpopular that he is running from his own constituents. So, and of course on immigration, he's a hard right winger there as well. He said, we ought to secure the border and we ought to turn these people around. Okay, well, I think we should turn Randy Weber around and have him head straight home. So if you want someone to actually represent the voters and not just the donors, in this case, you're gonna go with Adrienne Bell, and she's a Justice Democrat, and the whole point of the organization is to look out for you guys. So everybody remember, go to her particular site, which is bell2018.com/donate. And also, if you want to donate to all the Justice Democrats together, go to justicedemocrats.com/donate. We are coming. So this is just the beginning. You see Cori Bush, you see Paul G. Swearengin, Rogan Khanna, but there's a lot more on the way. So buckle up. And establishment, this time it's your turn. Brace for impact. Okay, now one last fun story for you guys to end this hour. Yesterday we showed you SWATgate when Melania Trump clearly swatted away Donald Trump's hand. Don't worry, we're gonna show it to you again. But it happened again, immediately thereafter, the very next day. So here's a new video of Melania Trump refusing to hold Donald Trump's hand again. So here they are, they're getting off a plane, they're on the foreign trip. Again, he tries to hold her hand, and again, nope, no, I don't think so, she lifts it, and then he pats her on the butt, because he's Donald Trump. This is endless, man. Hey, Donald, when is it gonna get you through your thick head? She doesn't want to hold your hand. Stop getting embarrassed publicly. Or maybe you talk about it on the plane. Hey, honey, you wanna hold hands this time? No, still no good? Okay, all right, I won't try. But of course, the knucklehead doesn't do that. He goes in front of all the cameras, tries to grab her hand, he's like, okay, now this was from yesterday. That was some SEAL Team 6 of swatting there, man. Get out of here, right? That was the most clear swat. Here's one from earlier back in January when something similar happened one more time.
See the president elect of the United States. See the president elect of the United States.
President elect of the United States.
President elect. Okay, the first one I didn't cover because I thought it's no big deal. By the third one, it's clearly a pattern. That's what I'm amused by with Donald Trump. Never learns. Like, it's one thing to get publicly rejected and swatted. I mean, I'm not sure Shaquille O'Neal's ever swatted anything that hard. Melania Trump swatted his hand. But again, he goes back to hold her hand in public with the cameras, and again, he gets rebuffed. There might be a reason why Melania Trump hasn't moved into the White House. I'm just saying. All right, when we come back, not only a whole hour of fantastic and fascinating news for you guys, but my favorite story of the day is in the next hour. This is, who are people getting married to next? I couldn't quite believe it. I think it is silly, and I am telling you that as a liberal, okay? So who are folks getting married to now? Oh boy, find out when we come back.